Today's daf is daf Lamed Vav, and we continue our exploration of the various ways that the Torah deals with the general structure of things and the specific. So we've had two different types of approaches in general, one being the Riboy Miut, which is no particular type of relationship between the things. Each is to be taken on its own. The Klal is to be understood as a very general kind of thing, and a Miut is the Derech Klal. See, there may be exceptions that we'll get to today, but a Miut in general is not viewed as a definition. It's just viewed as taking something that you might have expected to be included out. Then we had a completely different approach, in which Klal and Prat are intimately related and are meant to be the definition of sets. And then we had different ways of defining the sets, whether it's Klal, Prat, or Klal, Prat, Klal, and Prat. We spoke about yesterday. Because of the fact it was a little overwhelming, we stopped a bit early. But we're actually up to only Lamed Yamin Beis. And the last thing that we had read was the difference between a Klal, Prat, or Klal, and a Prat, Klal, or Prat. So the Prat, Klal, or Prat stresses more the detail, and therefore is more demanding of a matchup. And the Klal, Prat, or Klal is willing to generalize more because of the obvious stress on the Klal, and because of that, it's less makbid on the matchup to the details. So it's a broader set. Okay, that's where we were up to, and we got up to the words Michtei Prat Uklal, and this is about two-thirds of the way down. Michtei Prat Uklal Naaseh Klal Musaf Ala Prat Vitra Bikol Mila. I now understand the difference between the ideas of Klal Prat Uklal and Prat Klal Uprat, but it seems to me that we've got another problem, says the Gemara, because on the one hand, you're telling me that a prat and a klal, if they're not prat, klal, or prat, formed. So you said in that case, the Torah here in Nozir teaches us that the way to look at a prat or klal is as if the klal adds everything. Nasa klal musaf ala prat, vitra bikol mili, and everything therefore would be included. And when we came to miet v'riba, you said the same thing. You said miet v'riba is riba hakol. That's how you opened up the whole discussion with Rabbi Elazar, right? You started saying that it's riba hakol, and that the difference would be if you've got a klal, prat, or klal, or the prat, klal, or prat, so then we wouldn't be able to include the lulavim and the alim, machenken, if we would have had a miut and a ribui. So then we'd be in a completely different situation. So, but now you're saying, and we asked this in a different way yesterday, if you recall, that if you don't have that last miyat, and we wanted to say that perhaps that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov darshan's miyat v'riba, and I pointed out to you there that the Rishonim Ezra, you don't even have to say darshan's miyat v'riba. You could say that he darshan's prat and klal, and you're still left with the same question, which is mar b'kol mili. But what that boils down to is saying that there's no difference between a prat and a klal and a miyat v'riba. Because mirti prat v'klal nasa klal musaf ala prat visrabi kol mili miyat v'riba nami. You said before riba hakol, which means israbi kol mili. So it seems to me that really what you're saying is that the only place where we're going to have a difference in the approach of set analysis in the Torah, or an approach of ribui miyat, is specifically when it comes to klal prat v'klal and ribui miyat riba. But the whole thing really breaks down when you're only talking about a prat and a klal and a klal and a prat, and then there's really no difference at all because you yourself deny the validity of the analysis of the set in that case. So why do we make it a completely different approach to learning Kol HaTorah Kula, whether I darshan klal or prat or I darshan ribui or miyut? It turns out there's really no difference between them, right? So say, well, no, that's not exactly right. The truth is there is a difference between them, although it's a bit subtle, but would have important implications here. The difference would be that, so I'm asking you therefore, so my ika bein miyat v'riba leprat uklal. I'd like you to give me a difference between a miyat and a riba if I darshan it that way, or if I take those same two words and I darshan them as a prat and klal. Says the Gemara, no, there is a difference. Ika, the difference would be this, and the difference, the way we have this girsa, is very paradoxical. Because the difference would be to ilu prat uklal, had we learned this bederek prat uklal, and not bederek ribui miyut, or miyut for ribui actually in this case, Marbinan afilu alin velulavin. Whereas mied v'riba, I would have said lulavin perhaps, but alin lo. Now let's ignore for a moment the problem that we said earlier that alibid rabbi Elazar, we are being marba lulavin v'alin. And here we're saying we're not. On the basis of that, actually, the shita changes the gears here and seems to contradict the gemara before. Let's leave that aside because there's an easy way out of that. Tosfos says that there are different levels of alim. You can have something that's already dried out and almost stick-like. So it's korav l'shabishta. Remember, I pointed out to you that we've got like 30 different steps between a pure grape and the shabishta all the way at the bottom. The alim that we could be referring to over here might be korav l'shabishta. So you can't really focus on that so much. We're trying to say that out of the lower three elements, so that would be the lulavim, the alim ayiveshim, and the shabishta, let's say. That would be the last four things to be lamaid. So if you would be darshaning, and again, what's paradoxical is all along we've been learning that the relationship of sets is by definition almost going to be more inclusive. But that's how we pointed it out initially. And the ribuy and miyut is going to be something which I'm only going to be able to be mamayat something without defining. If I define, so then the definition is always going to be tighter. And here the Gemara is saying, strangely enough, exactly the opposite. It's saying that if we've got a prat or klal, then we're going to be marba more. But if we've got a miyut v'riba, then we're only going to be marba lulavi and not ali. Now, what could be the explanation of that type of reversal? Remember the very first moment we looked at the sugya, and we said, well, according to Rabbi Elazar, we look at Mi'ad V'Riba, and according to us, we said, you don't even have to know the details. It's clear that we are dealing with the Riba, and Mi'ad. The Mi'ad's going to be limited to taking one thing out. And now we're turning it around, and we're saying, oh, actually, on the contrary. When it comes to Pradu Kalal, over there, we're going to be Mi'ad even less. But if you think about it, it is really not paradoxical at all. If there's a relationship between the prat and the klal, even prat and klal, in other words, we said before you need to have a properly constructed prat, klal, or prat, but that does not mean, and the Gemara is here asking why it does not mean, but that does not mean that we're ignoring the concept of the relationship between klal and prat, even where we don't have a well-formed prat, klal, or prat. We have a prat to klal. So you'll say, so what then is the meaning of the relationship? The meaning of the relationship is that if you've got a prat and klal, the klal now comes to define what was meant by the prat rather than being two unrelated issues. If they're unrelated issues, then I'm going to be mamayat something. But if I now am saying, let me define what I meant by that example. The reason I took that example is because it's an expression of a very broad idea which extends outward as far as you can extend it. So you'll ask, then what's the point of saying the prat at all? Why not simply say the klal? And here Tosfos explains something very dramatic. If I don't have the prat before the klal, then I am not as impressed with the klal. Meaning, if I'll have another limud somewhere, I would have some kind of mamatzinu, exera shava, whatever. I would say, well, we see from here that this klal is limited the way it's limited in other areas. But if I first said the miyut and then said, now let me make this very clear, that miyut is a small example of a vast rule, then it's coming to tell me that that rule is not meant to be defined by anything exterior. It's only defined by its local definition. As far as it can extend locally, that's how far it extends. Don't bring any riots from elsewhere. Mashenkama, you've got a riboy and a miyut. There's no real relationship between the two statements. And therefore, there's nothing more impressive about the riboy, more defined about the riboy, just because it has a miyut. Therefore, says the Gemara, in this case, you'll have a reversal of the normal distinctions between klal uprat and ribui miyut. Okay, so this is a remarkable conclusion to the story. So if you've got, therefore, prat uklal, it's going to be more general than a miyut and a ribui. Now, again, just to summarize, and I think it's well worth the summary. If you've got, let's take a look at our ribuy and miyut first. And talk about how we would learn out ribuy and miyut. If you, we're speaking about over here the ribuy we had that was started with a miyut, right? And we say what the din would be, where we've got a miyut and a ribuy, where there's no mead at the end. Why is there no mead at the end? Because what was the mead at the end? Bichatzanim Vatzar. I used that for something else. So there's no mead at the end. So what the halach would be over there, says the Gemara, is that it would be mamayat everything, but its last level would include both Shabishta and Alim that are similar to Shabishta. Okay? So that means that it excludes only one thing. Perhaps it's broader than the thing that's excluded where we're talking about a proper cloth, where nothing is excluded. Good. Where we have a ribuy, miyat, and ribuy, so let's say we would have had the other way around. If we've got even a ribuy and a miyat, instead of a miyat and a ribuy, as opposed to a miyat and a ribuy, which we analyzed here, all over Shas, we don't deal with that here, but we do deal with it elsewhere in great length in Chulin. In that direction, a ribuy and a miyat is similar to the klal proper klal that we have here. Because since the Torah chooses to place the miyat after the ribuy, it wants you to see that miyat in context of the ribuy. In which case, it's not simply saying, okay, let's exclude something. Because if I want to just exclude something, irrelevant of the klal, I say the exclusion first. And that would be our case over here. If, however, I say first the klal, and then I say, and let's exclude, then the exclusion is broad. So a miyat that follows a ribuy, ribuy a miyat, is similar to the klal prado klal. Again, there may be slight differences between them. If we have a ribuy and a miyat and a ribuy, it doesn't bother us too much. We'll view that as the same thing as the miyat and the ribuy. Why? Because, as Tosis explains, you'll say, so what's the point of the opening ribuy? Says Tosis, there isn't any, but there doesn't need to be any. Because it's the general approach of language that you first talk about what you're going to talk about. This is my thesis. You're going to have to puncture his ear with a marzeah. Now, what do I mean by that? Now we'll get into the question of the details, the klal of what is meant by a marzeah, but language accepts. If you don't believe that the Torah is being technical and trying to define sets, language will accept an introduction. But language will not accept an exclusion before you've even started explaining yourself. Therefore, says Tosfos, that's the reason why all along the Gemara has assumed that there is no such thing as a miyat ribuy miyat. Because it would be ridiculous. What would be the point of opening with a miyat if what you really wanted to do was talk about ribuy miyat? Which is why all along we said, but when do you know whether you're supposed to darshan something and not include it, or when do you include it and then it becomes a prat kalal or prat? Because it can't possibly be, this. Remember the Rabbeinu Tam's approach, it can't possibly be a ribuy miyat ribuy, because there's no such thing. Here at last, at the end of the sugya, Tosis explains why there can be no such thing. There can be no such thing because if you deny the Torah's interest in sets, then you have no linguistic reason to justify beginning with an exclusion. If the lima that you're talking about is an exclusion followed by the ribuy, then it has a technical meaning. I want you to be very clear that I don't want this exclusion to go very far. So now view it as a unit, okay? Other than, this is what I mean. Now you would talk like that too. Other than X, here's the rule. So then I only exclude a very well-defined X. The thing that is most reasonable to exclude. The Shabishta. But why would I then have a miyat and a ribuy followed by another miyat if I didn't mean to say other than X? And I meant to make that the same as the ribuy, miyat, ribuy. You see? So therefore, our limudim are, the ribuy miyat is similar to klal pradu klal. The miyat ribuy is, however, never going to be a miyat ribuy miyat, because that doesn't mean anything. That would have to be a prat klal or prat. The difference between the prat klal and prat and the klal prat or klal is only in the extent of which I stress the breadth of the set. If I have two klals, I want it to be a broader set, and therefore you only have to match up one element of the common denominator of the examples rather than all of them. If I stress the prat, I still mean a set. And again, it's because it's well formed. I have the three elements. So I again mean a set. But, in that case, since I stress the prat, I mean a set that's not as broad. It's more constricted. I want you to stress the prat elements. If I was trying to talk to you in terms of miyat and ribui, I would never talk in terms of a miyat and a ribui followed by a miyat. Because go explain to me why anyone in his right mind would do that. If it isn't a well-formed, interconnected statement, what is it? Does everybody see that, how natural that is? It's part of natural language. What is that? It's very natural to say, other than X, I say Y. Yes. It's very natural to say, okay, now, this is what I mean, but not that. It's also very natural. They don't mean the same thing, by the way. Even in natural language, they don't mean the same thing. Because when you will say, other than X, I mean Y, everybody will take what you mean as this thing excluded. That's not even important. That's the last thing you would have thought. So don't misunderstand me. Other than X, I mean Y, right? So that means I will exclude only the most obviously excludable item. If I say a klal first, I say, okay, here's what I mean. Other than that, now that means that I'm talking about something that you wouldn't, I didn't want you not to misunderstand, because I'm talking about something that really has to be well defined, you see. I'll never bring up an exclusion unless you would have looked at me as being an idiot if I didn't explain to you what I meant. So we do this in English also. Well, other than where, which of course, I mean, don't think for a moment I would talk about that. But other than that obvious case, this is what I mean. The only thing that pushes me to mention it first is the fact that I don't want to be looked at as a fool. Okay, so therefore it's the most reasonable to exclude. If I tell you, here's what I'm talking about, but let me clarify, not X. So, well, how far did you mean that, not X? So then already I look at what you said, and I'll say, okay, you mean anything that isn't similar to this. Similar to that is very broad, so it turns out to be the equivalent of klal prado klal, even though it's not working in the sense of sets. All right? So it's really a very, very logical kind of thing. The one item that is sort of hidden here and has fallen through the cracks is that the Gemara in Chulin discusses the construct of klal prado klal as questionable for one reason. Is a klal prado klal essentially a glorified klal uprat? Now, if it's a klal uprat, we didn't mention this here. If it's a klal uprat, what would be the din? That ein bichlal ela masha bifrat. So then you'll ask yourself, so what's the point of saying the prat? I mean, the klal. What's the point of saying the klal, right? You're only going to define the prat, just like we asked over here. We've got the prat of klal. What's the point? The point is stressing the klal. So the inverse would also be true in that case. Whereas the Ravid says, maybe it comes to teach you that you'll be chayav at each one of these pratim individually. Fine, but leave that aside for a moment. If I look at things and say, look, initially I'll have a klal prat, and therefore I would have said that there's nothing here. It comes along the last klal, and it changes everything by saying, well, no, don't take that in such a restricted way. And that's one way of looking at it. I could also look at it as saying, if I wouldn't have had that first klal, I would have had a prat klal. That would have been marba everything. So therefore I need the first klal to constrict it a bit. Now that question technically is called, is the klal of batra the ikar, or is the klal of kama the ikar? Is it that the klal of batra is an afterthought to, well, let's not constrict it as much as you thought? Or is the klal of kama the afterthought? Well, let's not broaden it as much as you thought, you see? That nafkamina, also in the Gemara and Chulin, is a key to uncovering whether you're looking to match up the set in many ways or in partial ways. Here the Gemara ignores that entirely. So Tosis has to say that Enafinami will have to say that this is going according only to the Mandi Omar, who indeed holds that we're looking to be Marva a lot with the Klal Prado Klal, and that the Iker would be the Rebut that is coming at the end. Okay, not everybody agrees to that. There may be more significant, although subtler, differences. But again, I just want you to be aware of the fact that there's internal issues in the construction of the klal prado klal as well. But what's yotzei from the entire discussion that we have is that there are two basic approaches to the Torah. Is it dealing with an analysis of natural language, or is it dealing with a very well-defined mathematical connection between elements of sets? And between those two approaches, there is one case where everybody, it turns out in our sugya, where everybody agrees that even if, generally speaking, the Torah will look at the natural way of speaking, there's one place where you cannot excuse something as being natural. And that's where you've got the construction of a miut, ribui miut. There is no such miut in the Torah. That's not magic. It's understandable, says Tysis, that there's no such bita in the Torah. So either in such a case, you're going to have to say that that last thing was not really a mead, it was a drush of some kind, like the Chartzili Matzah, or you're going to have to bite the bullet and say that even though all over I hold the Torah doesn't do this, in this particular case, it wants us to know that we must look at this as a set. Okay? Great. All right. The next thing we had in the Mishnah, I hope you guys are happy. This is so much fun. Next, poor Richard, he's stuck. He can't imagine stuck skiing or boiling in the heat, you know, instead of having this fun. I mean, okay. The next thing we had in the Mishnah was Rabbi Akiva. Now, let's take a look again and see Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said that, remember, according to the Rambam, this represented the third day. According to the other Rishonim, maybe it's only the day of the Mishnah Achorina. But what it was that he said was on Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis, Afilu shara pito v'yayin v'yeshba kedei letzarif kezayit chayav. Now, when you look at Rabbi Akiva, in the contrast to the Mishnah Rishona, who was talking about Revi'i, one thing that jumps out at you is that Rabbi Akiva is not talking about a Revi'it. He's talking about a Kizayit, right? On the basis of that, many conclude that this is what the Mishnah Chodesh is saying, and that all of the Achila, including what we would call drinking usually, when it comes to Nazir, even the liquids are measured by Kizayit. Whereas the Mishnah Rishona, many learn, Achi Yishte Revi'it Yayin, is actually coming to say, or eat. That the essence is the drinking of wine, and therefore when it comes to a nazir, even if you're ingesting the grape through the act of eating, it would be eating the shear of a reviz. But we cannot ignore the fact that Rabbi Akiva says this in a very strange way. He says, even if you dip your bread into the wine, and you absorb it, and then kidei letzarev, now it's true that the word kidei letzarev would have a double meaning. It could mean letzarev, to bring back all of those liquid molecules together, and put them in one place, and you'd have a kezayit. So that, I mean, we understand there's lots of room in a kezayit of bread for other kezayit. You could have a kezayit of wine that's absorbed in a kezayit of bread. Yet all of the liquids, there's lots of holes. Remember that a kezayit is not defined as a neutron star, right? Small. Right. Yeah, I'm saying, but it's not compressed volume to the point that it weighs more than the Earth. I mean, so at one point or another, we're talking about a level of empty space. What empty space? The general empty space that exists in molecules? Only that empty space, which is 99.99999% empty? Or is it even more empty? Why would it be even more empty? Well, because when you take a piece of bread, if you try squashing it, putting it in your garbage compactor, you'd have to take a half a loaf in order to get a kezayit. So which one do we need? So normally when we measure kezayit, we're talking about the natural volume, which is the mistake many people make with the matzah. They think they have to put the matzah in the garbage compactor in order to decide what the volume of the matzah is. And in fact, there have been reports that the shear of a kezayit as based on a neutron star would be equivalent to the weight of planet Earth. People have, yeah, I mean, they're still eating their kezayit.
Yes. This description, if he knows how much wine he's soaking up his bread.
That's right. So if he starts with a kezayit,
you know what he's doing, it's just a way to try to get a...
Well, it raises all kinds of strange issues, saying it in this way. So what are the issues that it raises? Well, one issue that it raises is the wine be'en? Is it only the taste of the wine that's here? Are you chayav only on the taste, or do you need to have the actual wine? Do we view something that's absorbed in something else as extant? It might be saying something even more drastic. It might be saying that if you dip your bread in wine, it wouldn't matter how much wine you had, because we would count the eating of the bread towards the eating of the wine. That's really dramatic. So, those issues, let's think about them separately. One issue is whether the taste of a thing is the equivalent of a thing. That's called ta'am ki'ikar. Do we view a taste as being the extant item? Okay. Then we have, within that, another question. There could be a taste in which we've lost the thing itself. For instance, a piece of meat falls into a pot of milk, gives taste to the milk, but the meat is removed. And it still weighs exactly what it weighed before. We may have no mamashut at all. Of course, when it comes to basar v'chalav, we have a new idea there. because the Torah creates the mixture as a new item. But suppose it wasn't pasur b'chala. Suppose it was some nevela meat that fell into some other meat. Suppose it was some nevela meat that fell into a kugel. There's differences there as well. And one, I can taste the difference. One is min b'mino, one is min b'sheino mino. So we have the question of ta'amo v'lo mamasho, or ta'amo v'mamasho. If you're talking about ta'amo with mamasho, how much do you need to eat of the mixture in order to actually be chayav? If you would eat a full kizayit, let's say, of the nevela that fell into the kugel, would you be chayav? Well, not necessarily. Suppose you nibble on a nevela. Forget about it. It didn't fall into a kugel. You nibble on a nevela, you manage to finish a kizayit over the space of a half an hour. Are you chayav? No. Because you didn't do an act of achila of nevela. The act of nefila, of achila, being defined as eating a kezayis within the shear that it would take you to eat a normal se'uda, which is four beitzim, according to most. So that's called achila, bichtei achila pras. But if that's the case, if the mixture would not support that level of achila, so let's say you've got a full se'uda of kugel, plus another 2 grams. Within that kugel, there falls one kezayis of nevela. That means you can't possibly eat that nevela. Sure, you can eat very rapidly. But first, let's look at the tzurat achila that's given. There's less than a kezayit of nevela spread through more than the shear of achilas pras. That is not defined as the achila of nevela, possibly, correct? But how about if we could add the kugel and say the kugel, too, would be included in your act of achila? So then it's not the same as nibbling the nevela, because there you didn't eat. But if you make the kugel with the nevela, now that raises another specter, which Rabbi Akiva uses that word tziruf. That's a scary word. Seems to be saying that, well, it's unimportant how much of the wine you had. What's important is that you had the wine in the context of real eating, which is you ate a kezayis. And that kezayis included some wine. Now that is called something entirely different. That's called heter mitzaref isur. It isn't clear from here that that's what Rabbi Akiva meant, but it at least raises the issue, and therefore the Gemara now is forced to confront that issue, and then we'll relate it later, tomorrow, we'll relate it to Rabbi Akiva himself. So let's first discuss the issue, says the Gemara.
Is the idea of the last one that you have to be eating, says the Heter, is making now eating, now you're doing
possibly.
Eating, and now you have this thing.
There's two very important differences in how that's done. Suppose the wine was not absorbed into the bread. Suppose you ate some of the nevela, a little half a zayis of nevela, together with a half a zayis of kugel. And you ate them together. So there is no mixture at all. Is it possible to be mitzaref something that isn't even mixed? Or do you have to first start with a mixture and then say that perhaps we could then define it as one eating? If the mixture is important, you would first need to define the nature of mixtures before you'd be able to get to yisur mitzaref lahet, because you'd first have to determine whether tam ke'ikar or not. If tam is ke'ikar, then we could say maybe you could even add the very mamashut of the heter into the yism. Unfortunately, that touches on yet a fifth issue, which is called chaticha da'aseit nevela. Suppose something has absorbed the taste of something else. Does it become that other thing? But that's not heter mitzaref l'isur. I'm not adding heter. That's a different question. Might there be a nature of ta'arovet in which a taste turns something into isur by virtue of the taste alone, despite the fact that the matrix that the taste is buried in would itself not have been also without the taste? That's a different question. How did we define isur? Is isur the molecules that have this additional taste associated with it, or is it only the taste? Okay, all those things we're going to be discussing. But first, let's talk about the words that Rabbi Akiva threatened us with, which is tziruf. Sounds as if you don't actually need the two things to be even together. And in fact, Rashi and Tosfos here both assume that the Gemara is talking about even where you don't have a mixture. It's the act of achila that's important, not mixtures. We're not even talking about mixtures. So therefore, says Rabbi Avu, quoting Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Yisurin Shabbat Torah Ein Heter Mitzaref LeYisur Chutz MiYisurin Nozer. Nowhere do we find in the Torah an idea that you could have two separate things, which one of them is Isur and one is Heter, eat them together in order to complete the act of eating, and claim that that was the eating of Isur to be Chayev on a Kizayit. There's only one place where we have such a thing. Nozir. And where in the world would we get such an idea by Nazir? Because the Torah, strangely enough, says, Miyayin v'shechar yazir, and then goes on to say, v'chol mishrat anavim lo yishteh. Anything that has been soaked in grapes, in grape juice, you're not allowed to eat. Drink. It's calling it drink. What does that mean? Anything that's soaked. I mean, we have rules for how to look at tarovas. The Torah seems to say, forget about tarovas. If it's soaked in anavim, that's one of the primary issur of the nozim. Because of that, we are forced to conclude that besides the issur on grapes, there's an issur of eating bread with the grapes. Weird, right? So, if that's the case, we have to expand our concept of the shir of issur in nozim. Ze'iri, Omer. Ze'iri says, well, it's not quite true what you said, that there's only one case in the whole Torah where this is true. There's another example. And that is, and all of this is excellent for its timing, we'll start, of course, with something that's nogea even not on Pesach. Where is chametz nogea not on Pesach? In Karbanot. So, when it comes to bringing a korban, if you put on chametz or sa'or onto the mizbeach, big no-no. You're over on a lot. So there it says, kol sa'or lo taktiru. So from the kol sa'or we learn that even though normally the meaning of haktara is similar to human akila, the mizbeach eats, remember it's a predator, the mizbeach eats the way humans eat, and you need a shira of a kizayit. When it comes to the iser of sa'or, putting a half a zayit of kosher matzah and a half a zayit of unkosher sa'or on the mizbeach will be machayev you exactly as if it were all chametz. Says the Gemara, now wait, 1 second, Ziri. Are you going like Rabbi Elazar, who darshins the kol? It does say kol sa'or. But, I mean, there's another place where it says kol. It says, not only ki kol sa'or, the kol devash lo taktiru, I seem to recall it says, kol machmetzet, lo tochelu. Mm-hmm. So according to Rebbe Elazar, and indeed Rebbe Elazar makes this drasha, kol machmetzet, lo tochelu, you must not eat machmetzet even where it's mixed with something else. From which we learn that there would be a din of heter mitzdarif la'iser even on chametz. Not on chametz on the mizbeach, but even on eating chametz during Pesach, there would be a din of heter mitzdarif la'iser. So why is it eerie? Do you pick and choose? If you're trying to tell me, Rabbi Yochanan, I want you to know that you're not taking into consideration a very important shita, which is the shita of Rabbi Elazar, according to which we have to add, yes, we have to add not eating chametz on Pesach, Petaroves, and not bringing chametz on the Mizbeach all year round. But you didn't say that. You left out the thing about Pesach. But why'd you do that? How do you have it halfway? Either you do darshan the kol machmetzet, the way Rabbi Elazar does, or you don't. Why don't you limit it to the case of putting it on the Mizbeach? So this is it's a tangential question. But meanwhile, he's pointing out that there certainly is a shita that extends heter mitzdarif la'iser to things other than nazir. So if anybody asked you, is there a reason why Mesechet Nazir has to be learned during Pesach? What connection is there between the two? At last, we know. That's another good reason. Okay, so says the Gemara, well, again, we're on a tangent here. Remember, we popped out of the main discussion. We're going now into a sub-program. So, says the Gemara, okay, that part, Inachinat, really, he does mean to include Chometz Pesach too. The reason that Ze'iri stressed this is because, you see, the part about Haktara is a much bigger Chiddush. Because there's a Shita that understands that the meaning of Kol Sa'or, V'chol Devash Lo Taktiru, is not because you're Mitzarif a half a Zayas of Chometz with a half a Zayas Matzah. It's rather because the Torah says there is no shear of a kezayit at all when it comes to hakravah on the mizbeach. In order to make sure that you don't make the mistake of understanding the pasuk that way, which is the way Abaya explains it, Ze'iri wanted to just to prove the point, just a shtoch. Make sure you don't misunderstand this to like Abaya. So I'm not even going to mention the part about chometz on Pesach, which everybody would agree. I'll leave it to Rabbi Elazar. But I'm going to talk about the one where there's somebody out there who's making problems. Ignore him. So in Lafuke mi Abaye, since Abaye who holds, what that really means is, Yesh haktarah b'pachot, because you don't need siruf at all, because you have already a haktara even without the tziruv. Kamash malah therefore comes along Ziri to say, no, that's not the reason. It's ein haktara b'pachot b'kazayit, but there's another issue, which is heter mitzaref le'isur. So besides Nazir, says Ziri, there's two other cases. Chometz on Pesach and haktara of chometz on the Mizbeach. Now, Rav Dimi was saying this over. Yosef Rav Dimi, the Ka'amal Allah Shmaitza, and he was saying what Rabbi Avu had initially said. That nowhere do we find in the Torah that Heter is Mitzaref Le'isur unless we have very unique circumstances such as by Nazir. But it certainly is not a general rule. So Abaye did not like that statement. He said, what makes you think that it is not a general rule? Let me show you how much it is taken for granted. It's the only explanation for the following Mishnah in the Sugya of Tful Yom Benogeya Truma. Now the Mishnah in Tful Yom says as follows. You have over here a bowl of porridge, and it's made out of truma. And in those days, they used to have the, you know, like you have the hummus today with the olive oil, the shum on top, of the chilva, and so on. So they did that for their porridges. Okay. So now you've got this oil on top, and you've got it sprinkled with garlic pieces. They're just like that nice stuff that they sell in the dishes with hummus salad, you know. Looks like that. Now, comes along a Tful Yom. Now, normally a Tful Yom does not have an impact on Chulin. He's got an impact only on Truma. He doesn't touch the Truma. In this case, he touches only a little piece of garlic on top. That looks yum. Get your fingers out of there. So he hasn't touched the mikvah of the Truma. Nonetheless, pasalat kulam, the whole thing is now not usable. Masha Inkin, if it were the other way around, if the porridge was chulin, and the shum and the shemen is truma, and then the tvuyon was nogea to the truma, interestingly enough, lo pasal elamakom magao. The only thing which is damaged is the truma itself, because the mikveh isn't, the underlying holder of the truma in this case, isn't chashiv, because it's chulin. In the other case, since the chashiv element is the porridge of truma, the things that are sprinkled on top to give it taste and so on, those things are viewed as extensions of the truma, yadot. So they will be matami, the truma, even though they themselves may indeed be chulin. But if it's vice versa, though they themselves may become tame from the touch of the tvulyon, when we say tame, that's not quite accurate, because tame technically means, by definition, to be matami something else. If it's not leaking whatever truma is, how could it be tame? But it could be puzzled through touching tuma, which is why we call it puzzled. So it was puzzled now the garlic that's on top. But it doesn't affect the porridge itself. So far, so good? Now, my problem is, says Abaye, you remember that Avinanba, we asked over there, Makom Magao Amai Pasul, why in the world would it even puzzle the Makom Magao, since one piece of garlic is insufficient to be makabel the tuma for which you would need a kezayit. I'm sorry, a kebeta. Right? So we answered over there, the Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, I'll tell you why. Matan, ho'il v'zar lo ke'aleha b'kezayit. Would it not be true to say that if a zar would eat this porridge, then if he ate a kezayit, he would be chayev? So that proves to you that it's chashev and therefore makabel tuma, or perhaps that proves to you that despite the fact that it's dispersed, we can look at it as being related to each other. In this case, of course, the kebetz and not the kezayit. Fine, that's a detail which we'll discuss. Now, Abaye says, can you explain that to me? Why in the world would be a zar, would be loka on a kezayit? My time. How? If he takes a kezayit of this porridge, how in the world would he be chayav malchus? Well, because it's got a little bit of oil or garlic on it that is truma. That's why he's going to get malchus. How could he get malchus? There's no kezayis of the truma on it. Must be because heter is mitzaref le'isur. So you see that we're taking for granted that heter is mitzaref le'isur in the issue of a zar eating truma. And because of that, we view it as extent legabe kabbalas tuma as well. So where does Rabbi Avu get off by saying that the only time we say at the mitzvah for Isser is where it comes to Isser and Nasi? It's not true. The Mishnah takes it for granted. So it's apparently a universal rule. Omar Lay said to Abaye, that's not why. My Kizayit, when it says the Tsar would get Malkus b'Kizayit, is because it has Kizayit b'Kdei Achilat Pras. It doesn't mean that if he eats one Kizayit. It means, says Rav Dini, that if he ate enough of this porridge that he would have ingested a Kizayit of the garlic, that he would be chayev, because in the course of eating less than a Kdei Achilas Pras, he actually ingested a full Kizayit. And where you've got so much of the truma that is extant, it doesn't become bottle because you ate a full Kizayit of truma. If there would be less than a Kizayit Kdei Achilas Pras, you're right, there's no way to ingest it in a way that's achila. And then you would have been able to prove the only explanation is that heter's with styrofoam. But if there's enough truma here that I'm actually going to ingest a full Kizayit of garlic truma, I'm going to ingest a full Kizayit of garlic truma, so then that would explain why the Tsar would be Chayav Malkus. By the way, the Tsar can never be Chayav Malkus on eating garlic, because it's not the right. You don't take off truma and garlic, but you're right. But we're just using it, as Tosis points out, as the idea, if it would have been the Shemen. Yes. Okay. It means given a case where the garlic would have, the item would have been the raita, like the Shemen, let's say. So then the Tsar would be loka on it, which means that it's completely here, but not because of Hetamit Star, this is a Zerbdimi, but because of Kizai Pichdeachilas Pras.
What happened to
But since if he would have eaten a Kedei Achilas Pras, which is the standard of Achila, within that there would have been a Kizayit, a full Kizayit of the Isser Truma, that's why we view it as extant. So if it would have been Batal in the Taruvas, you're right. Why would he be Bekabal Tuma? Must be because of Atamit Starfli Isser, and therefore a Tsar would be Lokanet Bekizayit. See? But we're not talking about a case like that. We're talking about whether there's enough garlic that you would actually finish a kizayit of garlic in betoch achilas pras. What, says Abaye?
Even though he didn't eat it. he didn't eat
no one ate anything in this case. They only touched. We're not talking about eating. We're using eating as a reason to show you see that this thing is still extant. Proof of the pudding is that if you ate this pudding and it had in it, in fact, a kizayit of garlic, you would be chayev. Says Rav Dini, yes, of course, because there's a kizayit of garlic in the pudding. Exactly. You're trying to say, I only need to eat a kizayit of the pudding. That's not true. You need to eat a kizayit of truma by eating a full, oh God, I can't believe I ate the whole thing, a full achilat pras of the pudding. Okay? So here already the Gemara has tricked us into contemplating the nature of a taroves, where something is still extant, not only where I can taste it, I mean, it tastes the garlic, but where it's actually present in the shear that is b'chayev me. So we haven't even gotten to the issue of tam kikr, because we're not talking about tam. We're talking about an actual piece of garlic, except it's minced, so it's scattered. So forget about tam kikr. There's real garlic truma here. The only problem is you've got molecules of other stuff in between. So what? You have a kizayit with the this pras? Then it's still around. So therefore, it's as if it's there and it'll be Mekabel Tumah also. Okay? It's good. It is a factor. We'll see what the factor is later. But right now, we're not worried about it. So, says Abaye, oh indeed, Rav Dimi, is that how you understand it? That we're talking about, since the Tsar is loka b'kizayit, why is he loka b'kizayit? Because yesh bo achilas pras v'diraisa. Whoa. You're trying to tell me that business about achilat pras v'diraisa? That's considered to be a... I thought that was a drabona. Oh, it absolutely is. Really now, says Abaye. Well, so now let's take a look back at Rebbe Lazar, where we were talking about chametz v'pesach. Now, the classic case of chametz v'pesach that Rebbe Lazar was saying is a head of its time for Isser, is the famous, horrific kutach habavli, which only Englishmen can eat. They eat it together with marmite, I'm told, in the morning. A little bit of kutach habavli. You know, you thought the marmite was bad. Let me tell you. So, So the Kutaka Bavli is basically really rotten, sitting around forever cheese, okay, milk and milk derivatives, mixed with chametz. So he says, Rabbi Elazar, well, you're chayav HaKutach HaBavli. Now, there's a lot of chametz in the Kutach HaBavli. If you are raising now, this is a bayat ravdini, a new issue, you're saying, besides hetem mitzdarf lister, consider how much chametz there is. B'chtei achilas pras. I always understood why the Rabbanu were arguing with Rabbi Elazar, because of the fact, the fact that there's a lot of chametz there doesn't matter. If you don't know the hetem mitzdarf lister, if you eat a kazayas, you're not going to get kazayas of chametz. But you're telling me, oh, that doesn't matter if you eat a kazayas, whether you get a kazayas of chametz. What matters is there enough chametz within the space of four bates in Davaful Kazayin? There sure as heck is. So then why the Kutach HaBavli? So why did the Rabbanan argue about eating Kutach HaBavli? Go explain that one now. Well, yes, we're not talking about it. Otherwise, it's stop, Mr. God. Yeah, but you'll get Malkus then. It was mixed before. Yeah. So how do you explain that now, Ravdimi? Now you've got that. Now you put your foot into your mouth. Because you're telling me there's an alternative to get Malkus. The alternative is Gezayim with Achilles Pras. And yet the Rabbanim, who don't know the Hetem Mitzdarf L'Isra when it comes to Chometz Pesach, according to you, should agree that Kutach HaBavli is not going to be potter just because we don't know the Hetem Mitzdarf L'Isra. There's so much Chometz in it. Why would they argue on Rabbi Elazar? Aha! So clearly you're wrong. And actually, there's only one option, Hetem Mitzdarf L'Isra. This business of Chometz B'chtei Achilles Pras, that may be an issue to Rabbanim, but it's not enough to be Mechayev you, and over here we're talking about Hazor Chayev Ala Malkus, right? Yeah. So, Omar Lay says, Rav Divitim, you know, Abaya, you got no idea what this Kutach HaBavli Sugya is all about, okay? It's based on a completely different issue. Please, Hanach LaKutach HaBavli, please don't bring me Kutach HaBavli as an example. What are you talking about? You're looking at Kutach HaBavli, you're saying, look how much chometz there is in Kutach HaBavli. Have you ever seen any normal human being take a spoon of Kutach HaBavli and put it in his mouth? Ah! The most you can do is you can dip things in it. So now, where do you get a kezayas chametz b'chtei achilas pras? By taking a spoon of Kutach HaBavli? Then anyway, you're dead. Well, certainly you're insane. So therefore, that shear wouldn't even matter because but l'daito it's so called adam. So it can't be there for kezayas b'chtei achilas pras. Even kasharif le'mishraf. The word sharif means somebody who's something up when it's completely inedible. So we call that to be sharif, right? Not kederach achila. If you actually take a spoon of Kutach HaBavli, put it in your mouth, so then you're mad. And batal daita etzol kol adam. That's not called eating at all. So for sure you're putter on that. Im mishtar kashatir, and if you drink it, you're eating it normally, spread out as a spread. So what you do? You dipped what? You dip potato chips in it? Okay, dip potato chips. You know how many potato chips you're going to have to eat dipped in Kutach HaBavli? Until you get a kezayas of it, you're not going to get it b'chtei achilas pras. So therefore, the only reason that you'd be chayav Kutach HaBavli is because you hold the hetem mitzdarf l'iser, not because there's a kezayas b'chtei achilas pras. So please, don't bring me anything about that. The truth is, I am right. And there is a completely different issue when it comes over there to truma, where there, shum, there's nothing unusual about shum. Shum can certainly be eaten b'chtei achilas pras, yes. And therefore, that's the reason that over there the Mishnah said the truma you'd be chayav on, not because of Eter Mitzdarif L'Isser. All right, I'm losing my audience just when it's getting to be fun. Okay, go, leave me alone. How about if we play it back at a higher speed? There's no Yom Tov Ebs away, but there's also no Shir. We've decided to be kind to women. Not only be kind to women, but be kind to the poor people who would have to come to the Rova on Shabbos and miss their Shal Shudas and so on. Mitzvah Shabbos is, Mitzvah Yontif Pesach is a bit difficult to have Shir. So we've decided we'll just have to make it up and we'll meet on Sunday morning at 8:15 as usual. And since this seems to be a sugi that's driving everyone mad, it's sort of like trying to eat Kutach HaBavli in a spoon. You know, this is meant to be spread out anyway, this sugi. So hanach lehetem mitzdarif l'iser, and we'll leave it to be mishtar kashtari. Prat klal nasa klal musafal prat. Yisrael be kol mile. But miyad v'riba nami, riba akol, this rabbi called mealing. My ika bein miyad v'riba la pratu klal. Ika, the ilu pratu klal marbina nafilo alim v'lu lavin. Whereas miyad v'riba lu lavin im alim lo. Om rabbi avu, om rabbi yochanan. Kol isurim shabat Torah, ein heter mitzrev l'isur chutz mi isurei nazir. Sharei amra Torah, v'chol mishrat anavim. And that must be Leheter, it's Tarfleser. Ze'iri Omar? No, it's another example. Avsa Orba Bal Taktiru. Now, wait a minute. Kimam Kirabi Elazar. De Dorish Kol? So then, if that's the case, Ze'iri Le'inyan Epchomet Nami, Enachi Nami. The only reason Ze'iri stressed Haktara is Lafuki Me'abaye, who holds Yesh Haktara Bepochot Mikazayin, Kamashma Nin Haktara Bepochot Mikazayin. Yativ Rabimi v'karmalala ha-shmaitza of what Rabbi Avu had originally said, to which Abaya responded, how can you claim that the din of Heter Mitzaref L'Isur is not a universal? What about the Mishnah in Tvuyoma v'amikpa shel truma v'ashum v'ashemet shel chulim v'naga Tvuyoma mikzatan basalet kulam mikpa shel chulim v'ashum v'ashemet shel truma v'naga Tvuyoma mikzatan lo basal ela makom maga'o. And we asked over there, but I understand why the mikvah itself doesn't become possible, but I don't understand why less than a kibetza of Oakland would become possible. V'avina ba makom maga'o amai pasul v'yomer rabba bar barchanam rab yochanan matam, I'll tell you, ho'il v'zar lo ke'alea b'kizayin, therefore we view it as being still there. Now, explain to me, says Abaya, my timer, why would a czar be loka on it? Only a possible reason I could see is lav mishum de'etar mitzareif le'isur. By the way, note that we've been learning this entire sugya like the shitos who hold that you do not require tarobas, like the tosis over here learns, the rush over here learns, that the shum and the shemen are sitting on top. They're not mixed into it. So lav mishum de'etar mitzareif le'isur. Omalei, no, that's not why the czar is loka. The czar is loka because there's so much over here of the shum and the shemen is that you've got enough to be a kezayit b'chdei achilas pras. So my kezayit, if he would eat a kezayit, the ik kezayit b'chdei achilas pras, he would be chayev. That's why we say it's a kabotuma. Well, says Abaye, you can't be telling me that achilat pras is the orayitahi. Says Rav Dimi, I certainly am, Omalayim. Ah, says Abaye of the Niyoshi. How do you explain the fact that my plea Rabban and a later Rabbi Elazar, when it comes to Kutach HaBavli, which certainly does have Kizayit Bechtei Ashras Pras, and therefore should be Bechayiv you without even mentioning Hetem Itztarif Le'Isser? Ha ha ha, Rav Dimi. To which Rav Dimi says, Abaye, there is no such animal as a kutach habavli that has kizayit b'chdei achilas pras, anach l'kutach habavli, the leka kizayit b'chdei achilas pras, because you can't just look at a thing and measure the amount of chametz that's in it. You've got to measure its suitability for eating. See, the kor sharif like nishraf, that's not called eating. That's called insanity. And both are dietary to kol adam. And in mishta kashoter by dipping potato chips in it. So then lo mashkachas kizayit b'chdei achilas pras.